This episode of Football 301, Charles McDonald joins me, as always, to preview the conference championship games. Bills, Chiefs, Commanders, Eagles, really fun games. We deep dive into both of them. Plus, a little Shrine Bowl preview because Charles is going to Frisco. And some mailbag questions at the end of the show. Really fun one. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. It's championship game preview. Two games, the final four for the NFL season. We have Commanders, Eagles, we have Bills, Chiefs, a couple great quarterbacks this weekend, a lot of stars on both sides of the ball. Could be really fun to deep dive into those with my guy, Charles McDonald, who is here previewing these games, but getting ready to go to Dallas soon or Frisco soon. How you doing today, Chuck?
I'm doing good. You know, I'm just trying to lay low where I can because I know this weekend in Dallas for the Shrine game where Shador is going to be and Deion's going to be there all weekend and the Cowboys have a head coaching opening that Deion and Jerry Jones have spoken about. So, you know, after we get off this pod, I'm going to try to lay low for a bit because I know I'm going to be running around and typing a whole bunch this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Get ready. We're going to do a little bit of a Shrine Bowl previewing at the end of the show, just because there's a couple of interesting names. Our guy, Eric Galco, has done a good job of setting up the Shrine game. He was here in Vegas the last couple of years, had moved to the Star in Frisco, Texas, a couple of years after that. But no, they just keep drawing guys, getting guys that are injured that maybe could still do interviews, which I think is a great angle for this type of game. But like I said, we'll touch into that at the end of the show. Should be fun. But the main event. This weekend, we got double deep dives to do this weekend. We're going to start with the third go-around of Eagles and Commanders, an NFC East battle. We dove early. Hopefully, I held my breath. But this is the third go-around with these two teams. Exactly the two NFC East teams that we all thought would be in the conference championship game with the Commanders and the Eagles. The Eagles are 6-point favorites at home. Commanders won the second matchup between these two teams after Jalen Hurts got hurt, injured in the game, and Kenny Pickett, quote unquote, played. And then and the Eagles took the first go around. But Charles, let's start Commanders offense, Eagles defense, two of the better units this season, two units that I thought the Eagles one was maybe more expected with Vic Fangio, some of the pieces they had, but Vic Fangio is for good reason one of the assistant coach of the years on the short list. But this defense has turned into a top five, top three unit, any way you parse it. And then the Commanders keep getting it done. I mean, efficiency, explosive plays last week. Jane Daniels has done a great job as well, but this should be a very fun matchup. But when you're watching this side of the ball, Charles, what are you first focusing on?
I know this is, you know, supposed to be 301 level football stuff.
That's fine. Hey, 301 includes everything
that comes because we've talked about, you know, Jaden Daniels and the Eagles defense so much this year. This third matchup.
We've got a lot of words.
I know. I opened up the True Media page and I was like, oh my God, I can't even look at this. Like, not again.
I knew stuff from the back of my hand.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't even have to look that up. Where are the Bills rank in a run game? 8th. I can like just tell you before I even had to look it up. Yeah. But yeah.
But I really do feel like the Commanders, and I think even Jaden Daniels specifically, like they've turned football almost to like just a raw game of fundamentals. Like, bro, are you going to tackle this guy or what? Like that's what it comes down to, especially on so many of these third downs, fourth downs they've converted. They weren't as reliant on it last week against Detroit as they were against Tampa Bay the week before, where they ran 20 plays on third and fourth down. But so many of the Commanders' drives, like normally they kind of come down to like big third downs and big fourth downs. And they're just able to kind of wiggle their way out of it and get down to the next set of downs just about every time. I do think that in this matchup, like having Jalen Carter and how he's been playing recently and really how the whole Eagles front has been playing, like Nolan Smith is kind of settling nicely as like a nice like secondary piece for that front seven. To me, you know, Nolan Smith is like the perfect guy to have when you already have someone like Jalen Carter. Maybe it's not the ace number one pass rusher you're looking for, but when you have a big guy in the middle that's dominant, it can change some things. So if they have struggled blocking, you know, those guys up front as far as the Commanders, that's not it's not always something new that Jaden Daniels has been dealing with this year. I know they're about middle of the pack pressure rate, the Commanders' offenses, but he's just so good at just finding ways to stay on his feet. You know, even for a little string bean guy, good little stiff arm here and there.
Olive oil.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, I'm surprised when the guys are bringing him down, how, you know, there's times where he's able to, like, get a couple yards, like, while he's in the grass. So, man, if he could just eat a little bit more, just figure out a way to put some more pounds on. Because, like, it's right there. It's right there from as far as him being, like, more of a physically imposing runner. But even as he is now, it's just so hard to get on the ground. And just, like, from a defensive standpoint, when those key conversions add up over the game, it just kind of takes you out of it a little bit. But still, the Eagles, as, you know, probably the best defense of football this year, they should still be respected and be given, you know, the benefit of the doubt, at least in terms of being able to make some of these plays that maybe other units can't.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Just, like, you know, some people have weighed heavily the fourth quarter performance and the last drive performances, but I think the lack of mistakes Daniels is making, and this is why the Commanders are able to put on these long drives. It's like, is it always pretty? No. Is it always, like, the most, like, you know, does it feel lucky at times? Yeah, but the thing is, they keep doing it. And so that's where I'm like, all right, this is their method, and Daniels can keep performing like this. He has no turnovers this playoffs. He's only taken one sack, and that sack went for 0 yards. So those sacks are drive enders. And this is a player that had concerns about how many sacks he took, and it cropped up in the second half of the year. But in the playoffs, against two defenses that can be wonky and make it tough on quarterbacks, especially young quarterbacks, one sack for 0 yards. That's just remarkable. And that means that they're able to stay ahead of the chains. And even when they're behind the chains, he can scramble, or Austin Ekeler is breaking the tackle. I think that was such a great point you made about the Commanders make you play fundamental football, because football fundamentals is blocking, tackling, and speed. Like, those are that's really it. And the receivers and stuff actually block really well. That's why you see the Terry McLaurin bubble go for a 60-yard touchdown, is because he got two kick-ass blocks in front of him, and then he has the speed to take it to the house. And they have the speed of, they use tempo. And that's where that play felt so college, that Terry McLaurin bubble touchdown against the Lions. And I mean that as a compliment. They use tempo. The Lions panicked and called a blitz, which, why, you can make the defenses very narrow with their calls when you go tempo. Okay, so now they're going, okay, we'll just do the slot blitz that we have. But against that look that the Commanders were in, not what you want to run a slot blitz against, split out bunch formation. But in tempo, they have no time to check. So, boom, their slot blitz comes, should be a run play. Daniels throws the little smoke screen, boom, touchdown. But that's the Commanders right there. Blocking, speed, tempo, all in just one little small play. And they make it you make a mistake, they can punish you with that speed. And I just think it's been pretty fun to watch and watch this offense kind of come up with some creative answers and just little tweaks that they do to make it hard on offenses. I brought up that Austin Ekeler breaking a tackle and making it fourth and short. I think it was on the first drive for the Commanders last week. It was two tailbacks were in the play, Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler. Austin Ekeler is used as a chip help to then leak to the flat. And I know this sounds simple, but I just like the use of personnel Cliff Kingsbury's doing, because most teams would have a blocking tight end there, maybe, you know, or maybe another, their other running back. They put a talented receiver as the chip and then going out there. So then that check down becomes a little bit more weaponized. Little tweaks, just little tweaks. Like, way to go, Cliff. I like those little tweaks. Like, that's good football. Like, just, it's nothing crazy. Hey, Austin, chip and get into the flat. But because you're getting the right personnel in there, this is why I started liking Arthur Smith, by the way, in like 2021, he would have Cordarrelle Patterson as the chip guy. And so Cordarrelle Patterson with the ball in his hands underneath is pretty scary, a lot scarier than a blocking tight end doing that. But yeah, just these little tweaks. Having said that, though, Eagles have one little advantage that popped up this week is that because Sam Cosmi suffered an ACL tear, right guard for the Commanders, and now they're playing Trent Scott, who filled in last week in divisional round. But then you're going against Jalen Carter and Milton Williams. It's a little different. The Lions defense was tough, but they weren't, you know, maybe they didn't have a Lee McNeil. They had some other good players, though. So that is one area where you want to make Daniels go into creation mode and keep him out of the pocket and not let him do damage. Yes, him scrambling is scary. Eagles have some decent team speed to keep up with that, but still hard. But I do think that they're going to have the Eagles just have that natural advantage on the inside, because it's going to be a backup guard going against a guy that's probably going to be an all pro for the next 5 years in Jalen Carter, and another guy that might get $20 million a year this offseason. So I do think that's one advantage that the Eagles can really pick at and really disrupt stuff without having to bring extra pressure and blitzing, because you do not want to blitz Jaden Daniels. He has proven that he is a blitz beater because of his legs and his quick throwing. So I do think the Eagles can do that and win up front on the interior.
Yeah, I was milling around. I thought I found something interesting where I'm just kind of looking at the Commanders they're on a 7-game win streak, starting with a 42-19 beatdown against the lifeless Tennessee Titans a couple months ago, week 13. So since then, they've won 7 straight games in the NFC title game. One thing I thought that was interesting was, to your point about the Eagles maybe not wanting to blitz or not being a defense that blitz a whole lot, since week 13, the Commanders are 27th in expected points added per dropback when teams don't blitz. 27th. They're like by far the best when teams do blitz. I feel like that's even like, it even kind of makes sense, right? Because maybe the best way to stay, you know, alive when Jaden Daniels is doing his heroics back there is just to keep him in front of you. And not have too many guys chasing him behind the line of scrimmage, because then, you know, you're just kind of in like a physics situation then, where you have a guy who runs a 4-3 is running away from defenders who are already chasing him. It's not going to go well. So I think the Eagles, you probably just want to stay in front of him, and like you said, just make the tackle, because you're going to have opportunities. He's going to try and make plays with the ball in his hand. He's going to try to extend stuff. He's really good at that stuff, but you're still going to have to finish that. And I think the Eagles might have the speed up front, at least to make this a little bit hairy for him. But I did find it interesting that they have kind of fallen off a cliff when it comes to passing when teams don't blitz now, you know?
That is interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's been shown that against the blitz, he's good, but maybe I think that's what just happens against this Commanders team, is a lot of defenses get antsy. And they're like, okay, we can't let him get out again. Oh God, they just hit another zone read. Oh God, there's another stop route to Dyami Brown for 10 yards. Okay, blitz him, get him out of the pocket. And then there's the gash. And I just felt like it's happened in so many games this year where teams get antsy. And then there's Daniels isn't always going to push the ball. He's very selective when he does it, but it's kind of like when he is selective, it's for a good reason, because it's going for headshots. They are a jab oriented team. It's a lot of punches to the jaw over and over. And if you can shield them, take them, bob and weave, you'll be okay. But what happens is a lot of defenses go, all right, I'm tired of getting punched in the nose. I'm going to rear back and knock him. Oh, he just knocked me out. And that's kind of what just keeps happening against this team. So it's kind of, it's hard to be like preaching to Vic Fangio to be chill and not blitz, because he doesn't really do it anyways. But that is a good point about just kind of playing quarters, take it in, make them beat you over and over again, make them patient. I will say N'Kobe Dean not being on injured reserve again really was felt last week against the Rams. I thought Oren Burks is fine. Oren Burks is a perfect number three linebacker, but you don't want him starting as a true off-ball guy. And I thought the Rams really picked at him in the run game, got him going every which way, because he'd be off-ball. And Zach Bond would be back on the line of scrimmage. Kind of funky looks, Vic Fangio. It's not funky. It's the most basic defensive front, but it was just a nice little hybrid look they do. But Burks really got exposed, I thought, in the run game. So I'm curious if some of the tempo, some of the eye candy the Commanders like to do, maybe put him in hell as well. But I do think the Commanders, like you said, they have team speed. They have Quinion Mitchell on the outside. He was banged up. It seems like he's practicing and playing. They made it tough on Terry McLaurin the first time they played. McLaurin was held to one catch on 2 targets and 10 total yards. But then the second time, he burned Quinion Mitchell, and Mitchell kind of got his eyes inside, kind of an inside release go with another great ball from Daniels. And Daniels loves to throw it to the outside. He has the second most yards per attempt on throws outside the numbers. So Quinion Mitchell, Darius Slay, keeping stuff in front. They're going to have a fun battle going against Terry McLaurin, Dyami Brown. I think this is fun. It's kind of a who blinks first kind of matchup between two kind of good units that have now played each other twice. So we don't really get that all the time, that we get the third matchup going in the same season. Going on to the other side of the ball. And now we got the Eagles offense, with their very talented offensive line, Saquon Barkley, their receivers, and going against a Commanders defense that has played a little better as of late. played a little better. You can still get them after in the run, but I would say against the pass, they've played much, much better and recently, especially with Marshawn Lattimore healthy. That does help. Maybe not the first time they played A.J. Brown, but it usually does help having Marshawn Lattimore out there. But when you're watching the Eagles offense, Commanders defense, Chuck, where are your eyes drawn to first?
I guess it's a lot about the one-on-one matchups, because I feel like that's kind of where the Eagles draw you into,
right?
Which I would too. You know, if I had all these, A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, Saquon Barkley, like we're talking about someone like Dallas Goedert is like your fourth option in your offense. Yeah. It's pretty good. That's
pretty good.
So, I mean, I feel like this side of the ball is not all too complicated. Like the Commanders, they're going to do what they do. Dan Quinn's going to do the. Like they're not gonna they're just not gonna be you know all that complex on the back end. You're gonna have your opportunities to get your one-on-one matchups. It's just how often do you convert them? Because I think you know when you start looking at this game, I want to say like this Commander's defense seems a little overmatched in terms of the offensive talent that they're faced against. But then I see you know the Commander's defense for the whole season. Fifth in offensive success rate on dropbacks. Like, you guys were the fifth best pass defense in terms of success rate on dropbacks. That was a little surprising when I saw yesterday.
That doesn't feel right, but I knew they were better, but man.
Yeah. And, you know, success rate can be a funny stat because they're not top five in EPA where, you know, you're just counting, it's like 1-0, right? But sometimes one is a big explosive play.
Right. Hurts a 5-yard gain on first down and the 50-yard gain on first down are still just a one.
Right. Exactly.
It's like batting average. A home run and a single count the same in batting average. It's the same thing.
So I guess with the Eagles offense, to me, it's like, how many plays is Jalen Hurts going to make to just keep you scoring touchdowns? Because I do think that even when you go back to the recent game they played where Kenny Pickett started, like you still were able to get big plays from Saquon in that game. You're still able to figure out how to generate some explosives. Maybe you're not quite as sound down, but anytime you have these guys that they've acquired on their roster, you're liable to hit a touchdown almost any play, or at least you know get a big big chunk every play. So Jalen Hurts, I really think all of this just comes down to how many plays is he going to make, and is he going to be accurate enough and confident enough throwing the football where he can give his guys chances to make plays. Because I don't think that the Commanders are going to switch up from what they do in terms of cover schemes. I think our friend Ben Solak or even Keegan Abdul told us today that they play press on the slot more than any other team in the league. It's like, yeah, we're going to play man. We're going to play cover three. And please just, you know, do your jobs. Do your jobs. That's all Dan Quinn's asking you to do. And they've been doing it as of late for the most part, you know, except, you know, like 60% of those plays in the Lions game. But those 40% they didn't. Big plays are going the other way, right?
So this morning I was like, all right, I heard we watched it like day after and breezed through it. And I was like, all right, I'm going to try and pull some clips and maybe use it as examples or to tweet out and everything. And then I'm going through it and every clip I pulled was positive for the Lions. It wasn't positive for the Commanders defense. I was trying to find clips and go like, man, look at Jonathan Allen here. Or man, look at the, and it was like, Lions lost this? Like the Lions lost this game? Because every play was good. There's a couple, you know, Mike Sandstill's pick was really nice in the end zone and everything, but still even on that, Goff takes an extra hitch on it. But no,
yeah, I wasn't exaggerating about the 60% part, you know?
No, you're not. And that's why sometimes it's the heat of the moment. I was like, I think even our recap was like, man, it really seemed like Ben Johnson was taking a lot of interviews. And I rewatched it. I'm like, I got no qualms with any of these play calls because they're all working right now. It's not his fault. The quarterback just turned into a pumpkin. I mean,
I have qualms with one play call, but that's it.
The double pass. Jameson Williams. Yeah.
I just don't trust Jameson Williams in general.
I don't either. The guy has been like has shown that he keeps getting in trouble for like team rule violations and stuff. Yeah, it's not who I want my with the ball in his hands with the game on the line. But no, I watched that game. The strength of the Commanders defense is the same. It's the interior defensive line. Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, Johnny Newton when he's out there. And I thought last week against the Eagles, and this is funny, this is why you watch the film, is at first when I watched that game, I'm like, man, Mekhi Becton. Great year, man. He really had a big game. And then I watched the film all 22 and he was He was bad, I would even say. I was going to say below average. He was not good. He made mistakes in protection. He allowed several of those free runners to get at Jalen Hurts, and Jalen Hurts against a free runner is a no-no because he just freezes. So I thought he got caught a couple times. I thought Cam Jurgens, who, again, another player who's had a really good year, he got caught a couple times against the Rams. They do a lot of slanting defensive linemen, and he just got edgy, the term that from my dad. I thought there was a lot of edginess from those two. Those are the two new faces on the Eagles offensive line. It makes sense that, you know, even if they've had good years, to circle them. So I'm curious if they can bounce back this week too, because I did think Becton was pickable last week, and kind of spiraled downwards as the game went along. And when you got the Commanders who have a strength there, maybe they're able to kind of create some internal pressure, which again is not where you want Jalen Hurts to be battling against, because that's where he freezes. And I'm with you. I feel like just Hurts has got to just play. He can't take sacks. He can't have those drive enders. It's not even about turnovers. It's really just like non-negative plays. You know, it's got to be a lot of neutral plays, a lot of non-crippling plays. Just keep above, stay above the chains, make the simple reads, simple plays. And I think that's really it. I don't know if the quarterback run game, which hasn't been great for them on read plays, you know, for the Eagles, that's kind of dropped off for 2 years. But that's another way you can maybe get this Commanders defense that can be very all over the place and very, you know, forward or eyes ahead and fast. I think Sanders still is going to have a fun matchup. Lattimore as well, going against Smith, going against Brown. Like, that's going to be a fun battle on the outside. Hurts loves throwing to the outside too. So I'm sure we'll get plenty of targets going outwards, which will be pretty fun. Fun game though. I mean, this is it's not all the time we get three matchups, like I said, especially if you told me midway through the season the Commanders making the NFC Championship game, I'd be like, well, okay. After they played the first time, which was a Thursday night game, I believe, I was right. Like, okay, here, Commanders are going to start kind of like tapering off. Fine season, great season, good for you guys. Maybe sneaking into playoffs, but I mean, they just keep going and they just keep going. They find ways, and this defense last week found a way. So that's why I don't want to just dismiss this all the way. I think the Eagles should run the ball 42 times, which is the answer to life anyways, but they should be running the ball every play and passing very seldomly. So that's how I kind of picture it anyways every Eagles week. But I think definitely this, when the Commanders have had more of a weakness against the run than the pass, especially as of late. So
yeah, I was gonna say run the ball
over and over,
because I mean, I would say that the Eagles offensive line, this is for most teams they play against, they have an advantage over the Commanders front in terms of talent. But you know, Jalen's going to hold onto the ball, man. Like, that's mm-hmm. why their pressure rates are always high. That's why their sack rates are always high, even though we all know that they have a really good offensive line. So there's always – the same is true for Jaden. But I think Jaden has done a better job of mitigating negative plays, especially as of late. So, I mean, it's not like the Eagles' passing game has been all that good in the postseason. I know that maybe you put a little asterisk next to last week because it started snowing heavy during the game. But still, this is kind of where they've been treading a little bit. But you got the Avengers at the outside and up front. Jalen, all you gotta do is just not make the humongous mess ups, and you should be okay. Mash the ball though.
Hey, sometimes you're a jockey riding Secretariat, and you just gotta let Secretariat go. You know, like, you don't. There's a line in horse racing. It's a good jockey sometimes doesn't win you a race, but a bad jockey can lose you a race. And that's he's just got to be a good jockey. Doesn't have to win you the game, but just don't lose the game. That's really how I feel in this. But I predictions for the game. The Eagles are 6-point favorites, like I said. So what is your prediction, Charles?
Eagles win, Commanders cover. Eagles back to the Super Bowl for the, what, second time in 3 years, 4 years?
Second time in 3 years, get a rematch potentially with the Chiefs, but we'll get that in a sec. I am also going Eagles win this, but I do think the Commanders, I wish I put my chest out a little more. I thought the Commanders matched out better against the Lions, but I was like, oh, the Lions are still going to pull it off. But I wish I put my chest out. I was like, hey, the Commanders are going to keep it close. But I was like, but this week, I do think the Eagles take it. But like you said, I'm with you. I think this is going to be a cover from Washington. And I think Commanders are going to find some ways. I think the opening drive is going to be very telling. And see how Vic Fangio treats the Eagles or the Commanders offense. And there you can kind of see it go from there. But I'm with you on that prediction. We are going to take our first break and then we'll come back with the AFC Championship game, Bills Chiefs. All right, we are back. It's time for Bills at Chiefs. And this is our next deep dive. I mean, I feel like these two teams play every month to my brain. They do. I remembered a clip from a few years ago and I thought it was last year and it was 2 years ago. And I was like, you guys played that year too? but for good reason, these have been two teams that are the class of the NFL with two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, maybe the top two along with Lamar Jackson, I would say after this year. This is a very, very fun one. We will not be talking about the refs. We'll be focusing on the two teams playing because that's all that actually matters. Bills offense, Chiefs defense. Charles, what are you focusing on as Josh Allen and the Bills offensive line takes on Steve Spagnuolo and Chris Jones? That's right.
I wrote about this game this week, and it's just okay. it's just a little fun preview. I didn't get too deep into it, but it's just I feel like this game, and really almost every Chiefs game, I feel like this season has been the classic tale of head versus heart, you know, because my head is saying, I mean, dude, look at the Bills. They're a machine on offense right now. Last week, they honestly didn't even need Josh Allen to have a great game throwing the ball to score almost 30 points on a Ravens defense that has been really, really good this year. So I know I don't think the Chiefs defense is quite where Baltimore's is. I know we were talking about earlier today. I'm tired of watching the Chiefs offense, but they're still the Chiefs. They're still the Chiefs.
And as
much as we want to sit here and say, like, I personally think that this team is the team that people thought they were watching last year, you know, where people are like, oh my God, it's so horrible, it's a slog. Like, no, I mean, that Chiefs team last year, they had some games where they scored 40, you know, like it was not as congested as this. And we even talked about it earlier this year, I think maybe around midseason or early in this back half of the season. It's kind of tough for a whole season to do 5 yards at a time, I think, especially when you get into these tight playoff matchups where, especially last week, Texans, like, that defense, personnel-wise, is, like, perfectly geared to mess up where the Chiefs are because you have great edge play, you have good secondary play, and what the Chiefs have really struggled with this year is offensive tackle play and consistency at wide receiver. They need Rasheed Rice back so badly. Just to get some easy plays back into this offense. But even then, you still can't totally count out where Kansas City is because they are 16-1. They have the number one seed in the AFC. They're hosting another AFC title game for the seventh year in a row they've been in the AFC title game. So I hate to go into narrative land on this, but when I look at the numbers, it's not all that compelling to draw a case for why the Buffalo Bills wouldn't be able to punch a ticket to the Super Bowl, except I know that Patrick Mahomes is on the other side, and I know you have to respect that. And they still have Chris Jones. They still have Trent McDuffie. They the high end of their roster still does have some truly elite players, so you have to respect that. But on a whole, man, I feel like this is a game where the Bills' offense could really mash the ball and get after it, and maybe not even have to make life too difficult for Josh Allen with the way that they can run the ball. Like, if you can run the ball on that Ravens front like they did last week, they got after them. Like, I was kind of surprised. Like, they matched the physicality and even, you know, surpassed
took it,
which,
to
is, which really says something for how Baltimore is playing the run this year.
Yep.
You can do that to Kansas City. So I think this is probably going to have to be a shootout for Kansas City to win. But, man, I really can't figure out how this wouldn't be a huge day for Buffalo's defense or offense, excuse me.
I would start with how the Bills ran on that Ravens defense because, well, first off, too, is that I got to give a shout out to some of those Ravens defenders. Travis Jones had a really good year this year in his third year coming out of UConn. Justin Madubuike, of course. But I want to give a shout out to Tavius Robinson. They started playing him when they shifted to DBs as well after that kind of Thursday night game I think they had. And he actually stood out to me, but I just wanted to give him a little shout out, maybe plant a little small flag right there on Tavius Robinson. But I'm with you where this Chiefs team is just so hard. Like last year was so easy because it was like, look at this defense, man. They have this defense. They have Patrick Mahomes and they have Andy Reid and Spags. It's like, of course they're going to make a run, you know, like in that in this one, it's more like I still feel good, but it's not overwhelming. And I'm looking at what's really cool about this Bills team. You just mentioned, oh, they have Josh Allen, but then you don't even quote unquote need him last week. You just can pound the run. That's what's cool about the Bills team is they can pivot how they want to. They use a bunch of personnel groupings. They'll go jumbo. They'll use tight ends. They'll go three wide. They'll go 21 personnel with Reggie Gilliam, which I think is interesting. But you said the Bills ran the ball no problem against the Ravens' really good defense. Last week, the Texans run offense, which is the worst in the league by success rate in the NFL this year. We've made 100 jokes about it. I've had 5 deep dives on their offensive line coach. They were able to rip off runs against the Chiefs defense, run defense. This is above average. It was great at the beginning of the year, kind of tapered off a little bit more above average. But I mean, they were getting into 2 back looks with 2 running backs back there and just having their way. And it wasn't lucky. I watched it on all 22. I was like, no, this was a good game plan, I actually thought, from the Texans. And so that's where I wrote about this is, do we see more Reggie Gilliam and see 2 back looks? The Bills kind of prefer to run 1 back looks, single back looks, but they have done 2 back looks. And then pulled at this thread. Chiefs defense, 22nd rushing success rate allowed against 21 personnel, 25th in EPA per rush. Okay, that's a thread you can pull at. Jumbo. Bills love their jumbo. And Chiefs, you know, actually do okay against it. And then I started pulling a little bit. What about against the pass? And sure enough, they've only seen 10 pass attempts out of jumbo this year.
This has to be a tiny sample.
Only 10. 5 explosive plays, though. So it's... Yeah, I did the filters, and then yeah. I see explosive pass rate 50%, and I was like, excuse me. So, and then I saw how many the sample size 10 pass attempts, 16 right. dropbacks. But still, you can gash them. Like, there's another natural thing that the Bills can do that can maybe get after them. And then the other thing too was Jalen Watson being back is huge for the Chiefs. He kind of split time with Nazee Johnson last week. That's the first time I've said Nazee Johnson's name, I think, out loud. N-A-Z-E-E-H. I think that's right. Nazee. But that, yeah, I think that's huge.
We're in dangerous territory there, you know.
Hey, I'm looking at you. Help me out here. But Johnson, as the nearest defender in week 11 when these two teams played, Josh Allen targeted him 5 times, and he gave up a perfect passer rating. 4 catches, 5 targets, 74 yards, and a touchdown. Jalen Watson coming in is huge. I'm not saying he's an all-pro, not saying he's the best player ever, but he's better than Johnson. He allowed a EPA per target 0.28 for Johnson, which is basically MVP level every time he gets targeted, negative 0.29 for Watson this season. Yards per target 8.9 for Johnson, 6.1 for Watson. Hawk rate, which is what the stat Next Gen Stats has, which is PBUs and interceptions over targets, 7% for Johnson, 24% for Watson. So him being back, and he's going to be outside. I was curious. Oh, because he's back, did they put McDuffie back in the slot? Ooh, maybe. No, they don't. They're going to keep him on the outside. McDuffie's going to stay on the outside. He's very good there. Saying all of this, all that preface to say the Chiefs have a weakness in the slot. And it's because some of the blitzing they do. They have allowed the highest success rate to the slot this year. They're middle of the pack explosives, but they have forced 7 interceptions on targets to the slot because of the blitz looks and tricking quarterbacks into throwing them. But Khalil Shakir does a lot of damage from the slot. Dalton Schultz. Oh my God. Dalton Kincaid works a lot from the slot as well. All these tight ends look alike. But no, I just thought that was Chamari Connor is their slot defender. He has allowed the second highest success rate when targeted in the slot, 9 yards per target. He has yet to make a play on the ball. He has a 0% hawk rate when he's been targeted in the slot. So, this is a natural answer for the Bills and something they want to do anyways. This is how they've been attacking anyways. And so it's one of those where the Chiefs have gotten some good news with Watson back, but they still have Connor in the slot. And I still think the Bills are going to attack that way too.
Yeah. It's tough because I remember earlier in the preseason when they said McDuffie was playing, you know, outside slot. And he was just, he had a quote where paraphrasing, he was like, hey, whatever they ask me to do, I'll plug whatever hole. And I think that they've definitely felt that. Because you talk about Connor, like that's just, it's just a big drop when McDuffie has to play outside, yeah, beside someone who's not nearly as good as Trent McDuffie. I mean, it's a big drop. It's not like going from all pro to a starter. It's like when all pro is someone who should probably be a backup. And that's
right.
That's where right. You lose some of the, you know, a lot of the effectiveness that made McDuffie like such a weapon in the Super Bowl last year, where it's like the middle of the field was just off limits, especially when you have someone like the Jerry Sneed on the outside. And I wish they probably both wish they could have him back for one more run. No. Jerry's like, man,
no one won. No one won that.
No one won here.
Sneed's bank account won. Sneed's agent won. That's won. The only yes. one that won.
Yeah. Rand Carthen did not win. Titans didn't win anything.
Spags is probably looking at him like,
yeah. The Wolverine meme.
Yeah.
Where he's
yeah,
in the bed, the picture. Yeah. Where is it, Jerry's? The one funny thing I do have on the Chiefs as far as this game goes is if you're looking at any really Chiefs data point, and especially when you look at the back of the season, it looks so bad. You have to pull out the Week 18 game against the
Browns. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like because that was kind of my dumb like light bulb moment the other day. I was like, God damn, these numbers stink. And then I pulled out just the game where let me just read off some of what Carson Wentz, you know, quote unquote, did against the Broncos in that Week 18 game, where we were joking, hey, the weirder things have happened than Carson, than, you know, Andy Reid winning a game with a back.
And then no. You watch one series and you're like, oh yeah, it's Carson Wentz.
yeah. They the Chiefs in that game, they had 98 total yards, 3 yards per play. They had a 17% success rate on offense. They didn't reach the red zone. 12 of their plays went for a first down or a touchdown, which is half of what the Browns average is here at 24%. So, like, this is like, oh, and the one that made our friend Keegan laugh the hardest, 42% of their plays went for 0 yards or fewer. So
42%? Almost half?
Yes, almost half the plays didn't gain a single yard or lost yard. So when you pull that game out of their season numbers, you actually get a pretty crazy jump on what they've actually accomplished right. This year. You know, I pulled this since week 12, since the last time they've when they lost to the Bills, and since then they've won every game minus the week 18 game against the Broncos. So if you isolate since week 12 and you pull out that week 18 game where they had like an AFL quality roster, Chiefs, 9th in EPA per play, 10th EPA per dropback. They haven't turned the ball over since then. It's funny enough, in this time span, the Bills are second in turnovers. They turned the ball over once. The Chiefs haven't turned it over at all. This includes the last two playoff games they played, 15th in they're 11th in offensive success rate on dropbacks. It's not quite the end of the world. It's just, to me, it's like, can you do enough to keep up with Buffalo? Because Buffalo's defense will give you some chances. It's just, do the Chiefs have enough to actually take advantage of what they give them and then slow them down enough on the other hand? And even if you look at the Kansas City defense in a time frame and you pull out week 18, they're 11th in EPA per play. So it's not like this is the worst defense in the world. I think it's just not what we got used to watching last year, but still, I think there are just some critical advantages, like you said, that the Bills have that they can exploit. Like if I'm Joe Brady game playing for this game, like, where is Chamar Conner? Because that's where we're going. We're hunting him. We're going to just annihilate you, bro. And I'm sorry.
Right. And then like you might get baited on some stuff, but like it's kind of, and I even looked like Josh Allen versus Spags stats, and it's like, he's still good. They run him a little bit more. That would be like the biggest difference, but all the other stuff is kind of the same. Targets a slot a little bit more, breaks out of contain a little bit more. He actually gets sacked less against the Chiefs than he usually does, which I think is interesting. But he against every other defensive play caller, Josh Allen runs the ball 3.3 design runs a game, 5% sack rate. Against Spags, it's 5 design runs a game, and a 3% sack rate. So, and a 10% scramble rate compared to a 7% scramble rate. So he runs a little bit more, which makes sense. So if you're going to blitz him, be aggressive against him, he might break a tape. There's that whole element too. You got Josh Allen's legs that you got to throw in there too, which is always the wild card as well. But I do think it's interesting that he becomes more of a runner, which actually does make sense. The other side of the ball, the death of 4 yard gains, that is the Chiefs offense. Going, it's a Bills defense. What I think is interesting with this Bills defense, before I let you get started, is Taylor Rapp is likely going to be out. He hasn't practiced so far this week, which means Cole Bishop, a rookie from Utah, I believe, is playing. I didn't really like that fit with Cole Bishop here because they're a quarters-based defense, and he was a single high safety, but that's a whole different discussion. But I looked, I did a little on-off splits. I know these are noisy, but I did think this was relevant because it kind of sort of matches the eye test. Rapp has missed 3 games this season. And he's been hurt in a couple others. There's 350 plays this year where Rapp was not on the field. The Bills are 30th in dropback success rate allowed, 48% success rate allowed dropbacks, 32nd in EPA per dropback, 26th in explosive pass rate, 32nd in yards per play, 32nd, or basically allowing the highest explosive run rate in the NFL when Rapp is not on the field. Now, again, some noise there. Some other things were happening in those games. Are they the worst defense in the NFL without Rapp? I don't think so. But they, what I'm trying to show here, there is a drop-off when Rapp is not on the field because they don't have a vet safety back there, kind of BS safety, shore things up. That's why they allow the most explosive runs, because that's what a safety does. So I do think that is interesting. The problem is, it's not exactly like the Chiefs live and die by deep balls and have been a very explosive run game this year. Last week, they had 3 explosive runs or 3 runs of 10 yards or more, and that was their season high, which is just an incredible stat that they can barely even break double digits. They're efficient, not explosive. But this side of the ball, Mahomes, this offensive line, wonkiness, or reconfigured offensive line, I should say. Where are you focusing on, Chuck, going against this Bills defense?
I watched the Chiefs game against the Texans again. It just, the one thing you can at least say if you're Kansas City, we don't have to deal with Will Anderson.
Right.
Daniel Hunter.
Yeah.
Right. Because especially Will Hunter, like, he had some moments where he just absolutely took over in that game. And
Anderson, he was insane. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just looked like a man possessed. Yeah, they did. I thought they did a decent job on Daniel Hunter for the most part. Mm-hmm. But Anderson, whew, he wanted that one bad, man. And that's always cool to see when someone just kind of goes into overdrive like that. But yeah. You don't have to deal with that this week. I don't think there's one singular force on the Bills defense that, especially in the front seven, maybe that can kill you.
It's
like that.
It's a lot of above average to good, as opposed to like elite. Yeah.
Right. Right. I guess with the Chiefs, I just feel like this is more about them and what they have to offer as far as like their own palate in terms of moving the ball, calling plays, getting the ball into the end zone, because they just don't have. They just don't have all that much. You're still, and I know part of this is due to the injury to Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy being a rookie, but you still have found yourself in January meeting Travis Kelce Travis Kelce Mahomes to kind of go psychedelic mode where they're in each other's brains and making something happen. But Travis is not quite the athlete that he used to be. Like, I think even the difference that you see with Travis this year is in that Super Bowl, when the one play, you gotta have it, right? And he turns back in the fourth quarter on like one of that last drives, and he turns back the clock to like 2016, and he's cranking it.
Two years ago against the Chargers, like a Sunday night game where he caught it and ran it, and it was like, oh, you still got that in the tank.
Yeah.
He can crank it back up when he needs to.
I thought this week looked a little different because there were times when he caught it and then you stay the same speed. Our foot's not actually, falling on the gas pedal. And I think it just, especially when you have to keep up with an offense like what Buffalo has, it's just so, so difficult. But the one thing I will give the Chiefs in that game, last week against the Texans, they did have a strong success rate on the ground in the second half. It's a whole lot of, 4 yards, 5 yards. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can get something from Kareem Hunt, who's got like 82 speed at this point in his career. He's like 85 strength.
That might be generous.
Right. I was like, dude, you look heavy, man. Like, I don't know. It's just the wear and tear or just natural running back life.
He's falling forward at least.
Right. So I do think that the Chiefs, like, they should be able to move the ball. Buffalo's defense has not been good this year, really. I mean, we even saw it last week in the second half versus Baltimore. When the Ravens offense, like, when they clicked outside of the turnovers, they did whatever the hell they wanted to Buffalo in the second half. Like, if they didn't have the turnovers, they easily could have scored 30 plus in that second half because they weren't stopping a thing. Seemed like every Derrick Henry carry in the second half was going for 10 yards. That's like, it's probably going to be hard to generate that level of just, you know, natural explosion in any facet of their offense. But this offense, I still believe in their chances to get, you know, 4 or 5 yards at a time. When you look at their stats, like since week nine, they're about middle of the pack in terms of EPA per play and success rate. But they are eighth in success rate on offensive dropbacks, because you want to know why? You still got the GOAT back there under center. And that's the equalizer. Even when things look like it's just constipated and there's not many options, you've got a left guard, a left tackle, you still have a chance because you have Mahomes back there. And I actually think that I've been impressed with Mahomes this season, because you're still keeping this afloat to where it's a fringe top 10 offense, you know? And it really has no business being that in any way. And I know that I think maybe at times this year, maybe his accuracy has been like a little sporadic, but it's not enough where you would actually feel like concerned about what's going on here as far as a quarterback. We all know what the deal is. The surrounding cast has just kind of fallen apart. Rashee Rice got hurt. You don't have much. And now he's dragging you through the playoffs. But I do think Buffalo's defense is just accessible enough where you might be able to do something to get something done, especially at home. In another playoff game. I can't bring myself to count them all the way out. I just can't.
No, absolutely not. And it's Andy Reid in a playoff game. You know, that's the whole thing too. It's like they game plan stuff so well. And I think it's a compliment to Patrick Mahomes, the ultimate wild horse quarterback prospect, is boring now. And people don't like it. And it's like, this guy is so brutally efficient now that he's playing more like Dak now than he used to. You know, he still has his stuff, his creation, everything. But it's, I don't know. I think that's a pretty cool transition, that where like people are like, hey, get to the firework factory. And it's like, nah, I'm just going to like hit these 6-yard dinks. I'm going to beat the blitz. Oh, another first down. Like they chase first downs and they get the points. And then they're just like, okay, maybe the defense can cause a turnover and we do it again. Keep the ball out of your hands. It's like, I don't know. It's still, I just rewatched that Texans game again. And I'm just like, this is boring. And they just scored again, another drive. Oh, wow. They just got another first down. Oh, okay. Well, there's Travis Kelce. Well, oh, he got open. Oh, he caught it 3 yards short of the sticks. Oh, he got the first down by 1 yard. Like, they just keep doing it. And that's how they want to win. That's how they want to play. I think going against this Bills defense, like you said, the Bills defense has not been overwhelming this year. They're well coached and they got a lot of good, like, solid players. It's just, again, once you get the playoff time, this is why they signed Von Miller back in the day, a couple of years ago, is they wanted a ace pass rusher to take over in playoff games. They want that guy, the closer, as Tony Romo calls him. And I really like that term. They don't really have that, but they have a lot of solid and good. AJ Espinenza, Ed Oliver. I think Ed Oliver going against Mike Caliendo at left guard could be a big, big mismatch, or Daquan Jones. Caliendo turned a little bit into a pumpkin last week. He gave up 7 pressures last week. By the way, we were talking about that week 18 game against the Broncos. DJ Humphreys gave up 7 pressures on 22 dropbacks. 31.8% pressure rate allowed. Anything above 10%. 10% is like the baseline for solid. So triple that. He gave up 4 quick pressures. Like, one is crazy. Give up 4. So I can see why they have Joe Tooney at left tackle. Long story short. And they're like, yeah, this is a little bit better. Caliendo's going to have a tougher mismatch. They might have Will Anderson, Daniil Hunter, Ed Oliver. You know, Dini Galatri, Mario Edwards are pretty good. But I think Ed Oliver is a little half step above that. So I think he's going to have his hands full. So I think they're going to be running a lot to the right this week to avoid those matchups. And I think the Chiefs just play their game. It's going to come down to really no stupid turnovers. The last time these two teams played, Mahomes threw a pick on the first play as he's getting tackled, he just sails the ball. And like, they just can't have that, because they're, like you said, they're going against a Bills offense that's good can run the ball, and Josh Allen, who was going to be second team all pro most likely. Like, so it's just a very, very, it's a playoff matchup. Yeah. You have to be on your game. Like, you really do. It's no mistakes, and Mahomes has to be Mahomes, and their run game just has to be efficient. Doesn't have to be explosive, just efficient. And it's really going to be a time of possession game for them, which is crazy to say about the Chiefs.
Yeah, but, it is.
It is. It just doesn't feel, it doesn't feel right, but this is where they are. This is what good teams and dynasties do. They go through different, you know, iterations of their version. So
I was watching the Chiefs last night, and I was like, man, like, I was like, I need another nuclear Mahomes stat season before this is over. I was like, wait, he's not even 30 yet. Okay. Like, we got time.
We're just hitting his prime. Like, that's,
Dude, 32-year-old Mahomes is going to be,
oh my God. I know. 27 to 30. I mean, yeah, yeah. You look at all the stat seasons, it's usually 29, 30, 31 are the best years. So strap in, everybody.
I do wonder this week if Buffalo has any qualms about how they normally approach defense or pass defense, which is just not blitzing really. Because they did change it up a little bit last week.
They did?
They
blitz a bunch on second down, which was interesting.
Yeah.
They've become a really blitz happy team on second down, and that's it. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. It is kind of funny for the whole year. They have the third most overall snaps, dropbacks without blitzes this year. They're 31st in success rate, offensive success rate on dropbacks on those plays. The Chiefs are 5th in success rate on dropbacks where the defense does not blitz. What's funny about that, though, is they're 22nd in net yards per attempt on those plays. So 5th in success rate. So, yeah, they're getting 6 yards and just bloop, 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 bloop. Yep. So if you could just, man, if you can just find ways to just get those 5 yards at a time, I think Sean McDermott, he's going to have good plans to take away, I was going to say, what you do well in the passing game, but what you do well is just Mahomes having the ball in his hands. It's not like you're actually getting that much help. Yeah. It's not like you're getting that much help from like Xavier Worthy and some of the other guys. So, if they back off and don't force the error, I think Mahomes can pick him apart. It might not be like the pick him apart that you're used to looking at, but when you look back and it's like 6 yards per attempt, you're like, damn, he played good. I could definitely see that being one of the case this week.
It's almost like late career Breeze now with him. Like, it's going to be these brutally efficient games. And it's like, man, it's like he only had 26 dropbacks, but he's 20 of 26 and they got 16 first downs, you know, so like absurd stats like that, where he's just always getting those first downs, maybe not touchdowns. I'll say one spot, they're also weak against the slot this year. And that's just kind of, they run a lot of cover two. That's kind of just some of the basis of their zone stuff, as opposed to maybe man coverages and things. The Bills, and I've talked about this defense is my last kind of thing, scheme thing. Look for the little odd mirror fronts that they love, which is where Matt Milano is essentially a de facto QB spy. They used it on Lamar a couple times last week. They used it on Bo Nix the week before that. I watched the last Chiefs game. They used it a couple times successfully, too. They got 2 sacks off of it. And had a third one. They spilled Mahomes out of the pocket. Mahomes made a nice throw. Of course he did. But that is another thing, too. So if you see these kind of, it will be on third down, three, it'll look like 4-man rush, but only 3 will come. And then there's the spy. But what they're trying to do is bait Mahomes to break out of the pocket, and the Milano flushes him out. I've been waiting for more defenses to use this, and I've only seen, it's a big college defense right now, and I've seen like 3 NFL defenses use it. Funnily enough, it's the Bills and the Chiefs are 2 of those defenses that have used it. And so might be a week you see that. So if you remember the interception from 2022 that ended the game in Arrowhead, that was the play that Milano spills him out. Mahomes throws a pick as he's trying to create a play. So get ready for that. So you see some Milano chasing Mahomes outside the pocket. That's what those plays are probably at. All right. Prediction for this game. The Chiefs are 2-point favorites at Arrowhead.
I'm taking the Chiefs. I don't know. It's not, I don't really feel like it's all that logical, but I'm taking the Chiefs. Until they prove me wrong. I think I'm just going to do this until Mahomes retires. I'm just going to pick them to win every single game.
I really want to pick the Bills, but I think I'm going with the Chiefs. And hey, the Bills defense did some things. They created turnovers last week. I think they just still need that. And Rapp being out, just hard to get over the top with that. So I'm going with the Chiefs as well. But Bills win this game, I would not be shocked at all. And so I think both these games are gonna be awesome, but you know, this one especially is gonna be a nice little nightcap for us. All right. That was fun. We're going to take one last break, and then we'll come back with our Shrine Bowl look ahead and some mailbag questions. All right, we are back. And the other aspect of this time of the year is the playoffs happen, conference championship happens, then we get the bye week before the Super Bowl, and that's All-Star game time. That is the Senior Bowl. That's the Shrine game. We just had the Hula Bowl, I believe, in NFLPA Bowl. I can't remember what it's called now, but that was in Florida. My dad coaches that one every year. He's one of the assistant coaches with Brian Billick. But Shrine Bowl, Frisco, Texas, the star. You're going there to research some of these players, check them out, maybe do some features there. Charles, who are you looking at, some of the guys that you are focusing on at the Shrine game this week?
Well, when we're not being pummeled with Shador and Dion travel through Jerry World and the star and everything that he's built over there and whatever media monsoon comes with that.
Have you been to that facility?
No, this is going to be my first time.
I've heard it's pretty incredible. Yeah.
It's got to be. It's Jerry.
It's Jerry. I know. Yeah.
Look, he's giving walkthroughs, right? And tours to people. So I would imagine it's pretty sweet looking.
You're watching practice through the glass case, the plexiglass.
Tapping on the door while Dak's lifting weights. The one thing you touched on at the start of the show, but the Shrine game has really upped its personnel quality over the past years. I remember when I was like, no offense to like people that I know, but like guys that I played high school football with, like they were end up in the Shrine game, solid college players that, you got a first chance. A little day three guys. Yeah. But still to be in that spot is crazy.
Jake Moody won the MVP of the Shrine Bowl a couple of years ago. That maybe is my best example of what it used to be.
Exactly. And now just a few years later, you have three potential first round picks this year with Shador Sanders, who was a lock. Kenneth Grant, defensive line from Michigan, who's
one of your babies.
One of my babies. And then maybe one of the wild cards of the draft with Siobhan Revel.
Yeah. Revel. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I know. From East Carolina. Yeah. I might not be right. I need Dane Brugger to come up with his name pronunciations.
When I think of Revel, who I think of. I was like, oh, man.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Got it.
But having those three guys, I don't know if Revel's going to play yet because he did miss last year with an ACL injury. But having those three guys brings a lot of legitimacy to it. And if you just look at some consensus boards, guys like Trey Harris, wide receiver from Mississippi, is a potential top 50 pick. You've got a few top 100 guys. So I'm actually excited to go and watch. It's not like when you used to be like, oh, man, if I don't go to Senior Bowl, I'm not going anywhere. Like, this is actually a pretty good game with some guys that, you might have heard of over the years.
Yeah. It's nice that it's not just seniors anymore. They've loosened up those restrictions for both the Shrine and, ironically, the Senior Bowl, ironically named Senior Bowl. No, but I agree with that. I think it's good, too, that Eric Galco, who runs it, brings in the injured guys like Revel. And that way, Zay Flowers was at the one a few years ago as well. Just get them around. Interviews are as much as anything for these, and medicals and weigh-ins for some guys. Now so many guys opt out, so it's changed the math on everything. But that is just as big for these players as their on-field performance. And as much as you see plenty of clips of one-on-ones, those big, not even just a grain of salt, big kilogram of salt when you would check out those one-on-ones and everything, especially with one-on-one receivers and DBs. Oh, my God, when you get the 14-step routes. But it's still a good thing you see these guys. It's good for small school guys. Like Revel, if he were healthy, it would be a great week for him coming from East Carolina last year at the Senior Bowl. That's when Quinion Mitchell really was like, no, I'm not only just good and talented, I'm like a beast. And it was just, and he was taking it to all these guys playing in different, you might be in a defense that or an offense that only does certain things. So it's good to get under NFL coaches. Hey, we're going to be more pro style. We're going to be doing this way. We want you to do this technique. We want you to press. We want you to be under center if you're a quarterback. Like, we want you in a 3-point stance if you're an offensive lineman. We want you guys to huddle. Some of you guys have never huddled in your life. So it's huddle. Like, just things like that are really cool to see too. So, Revel, Nazir Stackhouse from Georgia, defensive lineman, who I feel like I've talked about for 10 years now. Kenneth Grant, Mitchell Evans is a guy I'd want to check out. It's a tight end from Notre Dame. Got hurt last year, kind of worked his way back this year, but I'm really interested in him as maybe as a round 3, round 4 guy. Ricky White, receiver from UNLV, maybe one of the best special teamers in this entire draft. Also, UNLV was a lot of fun to watch this year, my local team now. But he's another one I would be checking out there too. So, no, I think it's a fun Shrine Week, even outside the Shadur Sanders and the Sanders family hoopla, which will get a lot of hype. There's just a lot of cool players to watch out too. So, yeah, make sure to check those things out.
I think we still got a long way to go for draft season. We'll definitely spend a lot of time digging into it.
We got
some plans coming. But I think Revelle, this triggered like my mid-2000s NFL brain when I watched some of his cut-ups. You know, the first name that came to my mind was Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie.
Limbs are everywhere.
Limbs everywhere, fast as hell from a small school. I was like, oh, this is
that's a good one.
Kind of giving me those vibes, and then when I look back at Dominique's career, it was better than I had remembered it. Like he made a couple Pro Bowls and All Pro teams, so that's interesting. Like even have a guy with that level of ceiling here is cool. There are some under the radar guys. Like we'll talk about guys like Kenneth Grant moving forward. We'll hear a lot about Shedeur Sanders, obviously. But one guy that I've loved watching over the years that I might end up too high on is Clemson running back Phil Maffa. He kind of reminds me of a really watered down version of what Leonard Fournette was at LSU. Where it's,
you know, it's that's just, a funny cop.
You know, there's not much side to side, you know? But if you give him a runway, he's big, fast, and straight line. Hey, it plays.
He's an I formation running back.
Yes.
Leonard was born 20 years too late.
He really
Leonard
was.
In 1994. Oh my God. an I formation running back. That's a great little comparison there.
I haven't watched this guy play. I don't really know where he is in terms of NFL status, but San Jose State wide receiver Nick Nash. Just from a stats profile, he's got to be interesting.
Really productive.
Yeah, super productive. He's older. I think he played 6 years at San Jose State. But he's a guy who's a former quarterback. I think they had him as like a wildcat guy kind of earlier in his career. But he came out as a 6 year senior this year. He's going to be in the Shrine Game. 104 catches, almost 1,400 yards, 16 touchdowns. And he's one of those guys where that was maybe not expected when you look at the rest of his career.
Basically, like lapped his whole career stats, right?
Yes. He had 40% of his, 40% more of his career totals in this 1 year. He had 700 yards last year and not more than 100 yards in any year. But actually, not even more than 70 yards in any year before that. So I don't know what the prognostication is for his career or what people are saying, but that's a guy, obviously, who has a big week, and just getting the production at least gets you a chance to perform. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, he had 830 career yards going into this year and then had 1,382. But hey, convert. So that's the thing, though. If you can change positions, the timeline is different. Like, you know, it's almost like it resets. It's like, you know, he just changed to that. So that changes the math. No, that's a great shout out because he was so productive this year. All-American by some publications and everything. So, no, good shout out there. I need to watch him. I did watch one game of him. That's a lie. I did watch him. I liked him. So, yeah. No, fun. All-Star Games, Senior Bowl, Shrine Game. Check out Chuck's stuff coming up. I think it's going to be very, very fun. We're going to get right now to a mailbag question or two. If you want to get your mailbags on the show, either send an email to football301mailbag@yahoosports.com or submit a review on Apple Podcasts. Jump to the front of the line if you give us 5 stars. I'm going to start with an easy one. This is Henry Bohr, who said, I have a question. Hopefully you do for a mailbag. What do NFL players do when they go to dinner? Do they get guards? And I think this question was about maybe when they travel as a team. But maybe if they do just go to dinner, they do not get guards. if they're just out to their own individual dinner, they just go as a person and hope that they don't get bothered. It can lead to some dicey situations, when you get some people interrupting dinners. When a player just wants to go out. If you're talking about when they travel, like as a whole team, it's usually at a hotel. You're not going to bounce out. But at the hotel, you'll have security personnel, hotel personnel, so that's never an issue. And you can always usually scope out who's not supposed to be there. They're usually the little twitchy guys with 7 jerseys, and you're like, yeah, autograph seeker, go away. So you can kind of know there.
Yeah. I was going to say, I remember when I was in high school, outside Baltimore was like late 2010s. Early 2010s, not late 2010s, early 2010s. I'm 30.
20 years apart. Oh, God.
That was, our high school was maybe a 5 to 10 minute drive from the Ravens practice facility. And okay. Those boys were outside, I'll tell you what. And not with no security, not with nothing. Man, I remember seeing Terrence Cody at 7-Eleven getting the Big Smoke order from Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. We see Joe Flacco all the time, like eating
That's
subs.
Such a good reference. I'll never forget this
my whole life. I don't think I've ever told this story on air, but there was a 7-Eleven like right on the corner of the school of our school that I think that was the closest 7-Eleven to the Ravens practice facility. So, you know, we would go there before practice every once in a while, and that sometimes is when they would be leaving the facility. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we would see guys at, you know, 7-Eleven or the grocery store. Really, it was kind of cool, like to see them. That is guys in the community after a while. But Terrence Cody, so people who don't remember, his nickname was Mount Cody at Alabama, and he was like the classic 2000s Nick Saban defensive lineman, where you're just big as hell, bad body, yes, slow as hell, but you're strong as a mother. And all you got to do, eat blocks for Dante Hightower and CJ Mosley, and we can win some damn football games. But he walked into 7-Eleven, and he had three large Slurpees, two full 7-Eleven pizzas, three boxes of taquitos stuffed to the brim, and then two full-liter sodas. And he walked back to his car carrying all of it, just... like it was like Easter Bunny just with the bag of treats or something like that. It was insane.
And Slurpees and two sodas?
Yes.
That's so
yes.
much
And
sugar.
Two pizzas and all the taquitos too. Like probably 12 to 15 taquitos total. And we were just in awe just watching him. And I remember my buddy, he looked over and he's like, that guy's not going to last very long. And he didn't.
He did not. Even if you look at... God, yeah, I remember because he went JUCO first, and then it was like, why isn't this guy recruited more? I was like, because he weighed 430 pounds at JUCO.
Yeah.
You know, it was trouble just getting him below 400. And also, he wore 62.
62,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, that was 60 numbers at defensive line. Always, I don't like it. And on top of it, they put him at fullback sometimes too, right? That's why I remember him vividly, that he would be fullback. He would never block anybody, but there he went, you know, just leading the way, the one man barge. God, Terrence Cody. It's a great point. I remember my friend that worked at Best Buy when I was growing up, Best Buy being a nice Minneapolis company. He goes, do you like Jermaine Wiggins? I'm like, yeah. Wiggs, yeah, why? And you go, well, he double parked in the handicap spot, so he picked up his new DVDs. it was they're just out there, in the community. Hey, they're just guys.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, sorry, he's a good guy, though. We'll get to another question. This is a fun one. Benjamin Meyerson said, is the 49ers Super Bowl window closed? This version of the team is not better than either Super Bowl team, and the defense just doesn't have it, except for our Defensive Player of the Year candidate, Fred. You also have an actual Defensive Player of the Year, Nick Bosa. Just seems like they may never seal the deal. Charles, do you think the 49ers Super Bowl window is closed, or the current one, I should say?
It's hard for me to say that when Kyle Shanahan is your head coach. You know?
Yeah.
And I just don't prescribe to, I've become less aligned with the idea of like just being someone who loses, like the idea of someone being a loser all the time. Like if you can get to the Super Bowl multiple times, you're doing something incredibly right.
Yeah, you're still winning.
you're 2 of 30 teams and not accomplished, which you have done multiple times now over the course of a season. And even good teams, we just saw with the Lions, just because you go, you know, damn 14-3 or whatever, doesn't mean you're actually going to make it there. So if you can get there, you have a chance to win, obviously. If you can get to the NFC title game, you have a chance to win the Super Bowl. So as long as he's there, I think they'll be okay. Now, how long does it take them to get back to like that dominant level? I don't know. But I just don't think I can ever say the window's closed on Kyle Shanahan, even though I really don't know what you do with this Brock Purdy situation.
That's it. It's like a question I'd feel better equipped to answer in 4 months. you know, in 6 months, just to see how this offseason goes. I know that's a cop out, but I'm with you that Shanahan's going to always make you competitive. It just is. He's got a lot of imitators, a lot of people have used, or what kind of his philosophy of offense and everything, but he always has the Rosetta Stone. Like, they translate off of it. Sean McVay does a really good translation. You know, others do a really good translation, but he always has that, you know, OG thing. And yeah, there's Purdy situation, how they sort out their receiver room, because they have so much invested in that. Who they go on defense, you know, what happens with, if they get Robert Saleh, or if they have to go down another path, how they reconfigure the defense. You know, Dre Greenlaw being healthy is going to be huge, but also just defensive line. They need D tackles. I believe they already parted ways with Javon Hargrave. They just have questions that they have to answer. But the thing is, they have a lot of good pieces. They're going to get Ayuk back. They still have Kittle. They still have maybe Debo, but I think Debo might be on the move. But you got Ricky Pearsall, had some nice moments at the end of the year. I mean, that's a lot of fun. Who knows with Juwan Jennings, but I mean, again, that's another good player if they can bring him back. They have nice pieces. They need offensive line. I think they need defensive line, but they still have stars and they still have Kyle Shanahan. And think of what you want with Brock Purdy. I have seen this offense be a top five, top 10 offense with Brock Purdy. That's why it's like, even if I don't rate him as a high quarterback, I still know that he can manage a top 10 offense. So again, like, I don't think the window is closed. It's just that they have to answer things and being a true contender, which I think they can. I thought the maybe drop off this year was a year earlier than I was expecting it. I thought maybe this next year, the 2025 season, would maybe they drop off, but maybe because they got there early in a bad way that they refreshed themselves earlier than expected. So these are all just theories. We have to see how this offseason goes. It's a very important one, but you have Kyle Shanahan, man. he might not open the window fully, but he's going to have it cracked just a little bit as long as he's calling plays for you. Closing out today, Charles and I will be back on Sunday to recap these championship games with the fifth quarter of Football 301. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice or Nate Tice on Blue Sky. Charles, what were you working on? What are you working on, I should say, too? And where can they find you?
Find me on Blue Sky at Forverts. I've been working on a lot of Stride Game stuff over the past 24 hours. So
it's fun.
Got a busy weekend coming up with Stride Game and conference championship games. I'll be in Dallas for the first 4 days, then coming back, and then we're getting ready for a Super Bowl trip. So busy time of year, but blessed and thankful.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And then I'll see you in New Orleans. We'll be doing some in-person pods. That'll be great.
A lot
from
of
LA
too.
To New Orleans. Say again?
A lot of eating, too. A lot of eating.
I know. I've been on that Peloton, man. I've prepped for this Super Bowl for this one. I'm losing weight to gain it right back. But make sure. I actually almost did the Senior Bowl to Super Bowl transition because it's Mobile and I could just drive down to New Orleans. And I was like, I don't know if I can do 12 days in the Gulf, man. I'm going to come back at 300. People are going to start asking if I was a left tackle again. I can't be having that.
Yeah, I did a couple years ago. I did the 13-day trip for Pro Bowl and Super Bowl when it was in Vegas. And I was like, get me out of here.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
13 days.
It's a lot.
In Vegas. Yeah. In Vegas.
I was 22. Yeah. I could do it. Not anymore. I like my house is too comfy now. But also make sure to subscribe to us. Follow us, rate us 5 stars. If not, just yell at us. We'll maybe say it, maybe not. Also watch us on YouTube, on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Thanks to Madison and Stone behind the scenes. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy Championship Sunday. And we'll see you guys next time.